Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 120 for September 22nd, 2011. From clay to concept. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, thanks for joining us, folks. It's great to be back here in the studio again after being gone a week for Autoline After Hours, and especially to be with my favorite partner in crime, Mr. DeLorenzo.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good.
What you been doing this week?
Oh, the usual, pissing people off and adding weight to the discussion. I don't know what I'm doing.
Hey, and we've also got Scotty Burgess from the Detroit News in the studio. And great having you here, too, Scotty.
Good being here. It's I had a European vacation for a while. And so
Scamcation.
Scamcation. It was officially referred to. It was the way that I convinced my editors to let me go to the Detroit or to the Frankfurt show. I had a planned vacation before. And then at the last minute, they said, let's go to Frankfurt show. And tickets were then $3,000 or $4,000. So I talked them into letting me just change my ticket for a few hundred dollars, and then I would stay the week. I was supposed to come back and do some stuff. I have a story I'm going to do about the Cruze diesel.
Chevy Cruze diesel.
Yeah, and I had an opportunity to drive that while I was over there, and was able to go to 8 countries on one tank of fuel.
That's pretty good.
So I cheated a little bit. I knew which ones were close enough together that I could probably do it. But, but yeah, it was fun, and it's nice to be back in America.
It always is. And then we should let everybody know, too, that joining us later in the show, we've got Clay Dean, the head of advanced design at General Motors. So stick around for that, because that's going to be a great discussion. But, you know, I got to tell you, I was so glad that you were at the Frankfurt show, because Scotty and I were at this dinner that Ford threw one night, and it was really good. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark Fields was there, Barb Smartich was there, and a bunch of us journos and the like. But Scotty kept throwing out these remarks, snide remarks.
They were not snide.
Well, that's a matter of opinion. And they got funnier as the night went on. So it was actually a really fun dinner having you there.
Well, it was fun. And sometimes I think that it all gets taken so seriously. And I believe my one question, which I can say what it was, which was, is there sometimes a white space because there are no customers there?
Which was a great question. And we should explain that. White space meaning, you know, car companies are always looking for, can they come out with a new product that no one's done before? And that's the white space on the board. So they try to figure out something. And you're saying sometimes they're just as white space because there ain't no customers.
Right. And, you know, I mean, you want to create cars that are unique and you want to create cars that appeal. But sometimes, people will say that they have this vehicle and it appeals to all these different groups and it fits into this white space. And you go, there is no car that can, you know, there isn't a car that can appeal to all of those same people at the same time.
I haven't sat through a presentation like that in 30 years that doesn't say the same thing. I mean, we're going after this group and it's going to all work out. And wait a minute, I was just at another manufacturer, the same thing. So you're all going for the same piece of the market, the same car. It's just, you know, you know, they overthink the stuff and they forget about, you just, A, build a great car. B, if it is great, it's amazing. People find it out and they go buy it. But don't sit there and regurgitate all that stuff, you know, oh, we're going for this demographic. This is, you know, my attitude on car sales is if you can physically get yourself to the showroom, you're a customer. You know, I don't care how old you are.
Well, and I think that's really true with a lot of cars that you get in them and you just go, this is a good car. That it's not entirely subjective what makes a good car. It's not just a matter of opinion. You can argue design cues or different looks of this or that, but I mean, there's certain things, there's certain standards that if a car reaches that and a person feels satisfied in that car. And I think that's what you're seeing with the Americans in the small cars right now, that they're making good small cars.
Although I saw the coolest vehicle of all in Frankfurt that absolutely filled a white space nobody else has looked at. And I saw it running around on the streets of Frankfurt. They called it the beer bike. And for all practical purposes, it looks like a bar, like about a 10-foot, 12-foot long bar on bicycle wheels. And the bartender sits at one end with bicycle handles, and he can steer the thing, and he pedals. And then there's stools all around this bar where you sit and drink, but every stool has also got bicycle pedals. So you see these people driving down the street, drinking beer, pedaling like mad.
They make
those beer bike.
They make those on truck platforms, and you can get them. You can get one that's enough for 24 people.
Well, the one I saw probably had about 12 people on it. That was the compact beer bike. But I'd never seen anything like that before.
I don't know. Was there anything that you really thought was a real highlight of the show?
Of the Frankfurt show, I didn't think any one vehicle stole the show.
Mm-hmm.
But there was lots of good stuff to look at. And there was no one topic. Of course, everyone's talking about, the global meltdown, blah, blah. Automotive-wise, I didn't think there was any one topic or any one car that stole the show, but there was lots of good stuff to look at.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're past the eco theme. Like, we don't have to write the eco theme story anymore, that this car show is all about eco-friendly vehicles. Everybody has that now. One of the things I did like was it gave me a chance to look at a lot of wagons, and I would love to see in a
station wagon.
Yeah, in a state
States.
War in the U.S.
It ain't going to happen.
No, I know. But it would be nice if it did. And that Focus wagon, the ST, beautiful car.
Yeah, well, all we enthusiasts love wagons, especially performance wagons, and not enough people buy them.
Thank you, Cadillac, for making one.
Yeah. Well, Cadillac does. That's right. That was a pretty gutsy move. And the Cadillac CL, I think, was one of the standouts of the car of the whole show. I like the Ford Evos a whole lot.
What about Kabang or Kaboom or
Kubang, which is the Maserati SUV built off the Jeep Grand Cherokee platform that's going to be built in Detroit. The Maserati is. A lot of people didn't like it. I actually thought they did a pretty good job of it. For two reasons. Number one, it doesn't really look like an SUV. It's much more crossover-like, and it doesn't look anything like a Jeep Grand Cherokee. I mean, not at all like a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
And to say it has the underpinnings of a Grand Cherokee is not a bad thing.
That's no, it's not.
Those aren't bad that's not a bad foundation to start on.
I got to interview the guy who designed it, Marco Tencone, who I've never heard of before. We just went to the stand and managed to grab him and did a walk around. But his whole thing is that his way of explaining the way it looks like it is he said, we wanted to look like there was something inside trying to break out. And so it's got this very vicious, you know, aggressive front end to it. But I thought the rear end was very interesting, too, because it's got a very fast slope to it. And yet there's still plenty of headroom in the rear seat. No luggage room.
More rear headroom than the X6 BMW?
That I couldn't tell you offhand, but I would say it's probably got as much headroom as a Jeep Grand Cherokee does in the rear. But because of the fast slope and the fast backlight, I'm sure there's no way that it's got the same sort of luggage capacity.
Now, do you think it looks Maserati?
Yeah, I do. I really do. The grille especially, I think, gives it a Maserati.
The front end, I really do. It's when it starts going further back is it felt less and less. I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes the number one selling Maserati. That's the car that people will.
Well, is the Cayenne the number one Porsche?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Followed by the Panamera.
The two
really?
That no one ever wanted
Panamera.
To see.
Wow. Huh. That's interesting. What else? There was Mercedes had their, was it the F-125?
Yeah.
Which is like a hint at where the next S-Class might go.
Future think with hydrogen power and stuff.
Right. But I think the hydrogen was, you know, just a show car thing. But what I found curious is if you look at the front end of the car, and we talked about this on our live webcast, if you took the three-pointed star off it, I wouldn't know if it's a Mercedes or not. I mean, it could be a Dodge. It could be a Subaru. It just didn't look Mercedes to me, and I thought that was curious.
How did the BMW i8 look?
The i8 is really impressive. It's superbly turned out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, they're all carbon fiber, electric.
It's a hybrid, right? It's not full electric.
It's gas and like one drive, one front wheel is electric and rear wheel is gas. It's kind of a...
And they're saying 2014.
Yes.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say that was goofy about it is the door glass actually extends below the belt line. So it's like you can look out by your knees and
that
your
probably
feet.
Won't be in production.
I can't see that being in production.
Wait, 2014 is going to be a hell of a year. Because let's see, that's when Fiat allegedly is going to show up, and Alfa, and the i8, and this and that, and this and that. But it's always... There's always a year out there. 2014 is going to be big.
Well,
before that,
big,
it was 20.
You know, I still think 2014 is the year that all this electric car stuff is going to come crashing down.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have to wait that long.
Yeah, well, you know, we got a bunch of electrics coming next year, mm-hmm. and we'll see a whole bunch by 2014. But, you know, when you look at all these photovoltaic cell manufacturers that are going belly up.
That's why I'm going to start a side business, Renzo's V8s. I'm going to go start buying every V8 thing I can get my hands on. And if you want a V8, give me a call.
It's a good idea.
Next year, really, as you mentioned, the Focus Electric comes mm-hmm. in. I'm real curious how well that does. What's the acceptance of that vehicle?
Now, what supplier basically did all that for Ford? I mean, and Ford freely admits that I forget now.
Yeah, I'm blanking out on that. Geez, a few days ago, I could blame it on jet lag.
Yeah.
Now I'll just blame it on age. I can't remember who it is. But, yeah, I don't think that the Ford Focus Electric is going to see any more demand than the Nissan Leaf or the Chevy Volt have got. It's just going to slice that slim segment of the market even slimmer. And then you're going to see a whole bunch more electrics come out.
If I were GM, I'd really go radical with the next generation Volt. I'd do something quickly to make it look the part.
Well, they could, Peter, instantly, tomorrow.
Yeah.
They could do it. They've got that Opel Ampera front end, and we saw a whole bunch of them running around Frankfurt, Scotty, at the show.
And now it's a nice-looking vehicle.
Well, you know, you could give customers the choice. Do you want, you know, here's the more traditional Chevy front end, or do you want the more modern front end? They could instantly offer that to
customers.
Oh,
we're not going to do that. They're spending so many billions on that gold bow tie and the synergy of the front end that it's like...
Well, you just pop the Opel badge off and pound on an anodized Chevy bow tie, and you're there.
Paint over it. I mean, just...
Tape it on. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll keep this conversation going. But Ben, we've got to thank one of our sponsors now. And since we were talking about Chevy, let's thank Chevrolet. The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStar turn-by-turn directions free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
No, the one program, the Opel program that I went on while I was at the Frankfurt show, we got a really good look at the whole Opel lineup. And there's a couple that I would love to see Chevrolet badges on. The Astra, I think, is a really nice. I would love to see a Regal wagon off the Insignia. We drove the Insignia. It's an OPC, I believe, what it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the performance version of it. oh my God, it's just so nice, so clean, so fast. And, you know, we were on the Autobahn in a couple of spots where, you know, you're doing 220K and it just does it like that. And it's just so nice. But, you know, I mean, they never said if they said most of those cars will never come to the U.S. But the Insignia is the Regal.
Yeah.
The Astra was here for a couple of weeks.
As a Saturn.
And that's a really nice compact car. There's a coupe version. There's a that, you know, I don't know how successful it'll be, and there may not be a business plan for it. But
it's a sweet car.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. And they do a nice job with some of the interiors. And I think Opel is a pretty good story right now. You know, it's not one that we really follow that closely here, but, I mean, it impacts GM. They had to go through all that restructuring, but Europe doesn't allow for bankruptcy the same way. You can either liquidate or restructure, and you can't get rid of the bad stuff and keep only the good stuff. And they were able to shed a couple of thousand jobs, not that many. And they think that next year, they were saying that next year they'll be profitable. So, I mean, it's an interesting story to follow and to kind of see what they're doing. They have about... I want to say 40,000 employees, but I don't know offhand. I think they dropped down to 40,000. But so it was almost 10% of their workforce that they cut. But it was interesting to follow and to get a good look at those vehicles. And it's like we had mentioned before, it comes down to good cars. If you make a good vehicle, people will buy them.
Anything stand out from the show from your standpoint, Peter?
From afar?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The little pod cars seem to be multiplying. I mean, that Opel was pretty wild. And the
Volkswagen had a one-seater.
Yeah, I think that Volkswagen Up is going to be a success.
Yeah.
It doesn't look nearly as small as it is, and that's a really neat thing that they've been able to do. It's almost like a 2+2. Mm-hmm. That second row is, I mean, it's right on the seats. But I think you're right, and I think that one will do very well.
We're starting to see the first ads on TV for the new Beetle.
Oh, I haven't seen those yet.
Mm. What do you think of the new Beetle?
You know, I like what they did with the design. That they had to go somewhere with it, evolve it. I mean, if you squint real hard... At a black one, it's kind of reminiscent of a 50s mm-hmm. Porsche coupe, which is intentional.
But it's less of a cartoony looking.
Yeah, they're going to do a Beetle R.
Mm-hmm. They had one at the Frankfurt show.
Right, and they showed it, and that was really a nice color on it.
Mm-hmm.
Looked Germanic, and, you know, that'll be interesting. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. Volkswagen just keeps turning the stuff out. I don't know.
Yeah. Pretty impressive company overall.
I mean, they've got the GTI, then there's going to be the R, Golf, whatever, and then there's going to be a Beetle R.
Yep.
It's good.
It is good. Hey, this is probably as good a time as any. Let's bring Clay Dean on here with us. Clay, come on up. We'll have you sit down right here and put a microphone on. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Clay is the head of advanced design at General Motors, director of advanced design.
Director of advanced design and brand champion, if you call, of Cadillac.
So, oh, really?
Two nice little hats to wear. So it's appropriate that we kind of tie advanced with Cadillac. It should be our most progressive thinking in the company.
Now, advanced design, I know you guys have got a studio in California.
Right.
Here in Detroit, too, or how does that all work?
Yeah, we have a studio here in Detroit. It's in a different building than our main design center, so it allows us to kind of think a little bit differently. We have some partners there that with our planning organization, so we're trying to guide and shape and create strategies and opportunities of where we can go. And we use those strategies in conjunction in the California studio. It's a larger studio. We have about 70 folks that are out there. It's run by Frank Cicito.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's got its own little eclectic feel. It's an old bread factory up in Burbank.
Cool.
Kind of in this neat, creative little place about four or five blocks away from Disney and about four or five blocks away from where the Skunk Works used to be for Lockheed. So there's a... there's creativity in the air there. So it's pretty cool. But we work together.
So advanced design for just U.S. products, or is this globally?
Well, we have advanced studios in Germany, in our studio at Opel. We have advanced studios in China. In fact, we're just opening up a new advanced studio that's a wholly owned GM activity in Shanghai. Uh-huh. And then, of course, we have some activities in Korea. So what we try to do is coordinate all of our activities. So most of our activities are focused in, this is our headquarters at General Motors, so we need to kind of understand where are we going in total. We can't do it all here, and there's the individual personalities from those other regions that really need to feed in of their needs, their observations. But we try to coordinate and enact our strategies here.
And, of course, one of the latest things that you guys have done is the Cadillac CL, which we've talked about a lot on this show, but it's well worth talking about even more because there's just so much detail work in that car.
It's a fun car. You know, I think advanced design and Cadillacs, the history of GM and advanced design, I think we love to work on Cadillacs more than anything else. And it's a very important brand for us. It really needs to be symbolic. And CL was a fantastic project. We led it out of a California studio. There's some great talent there, very international talent. And there are a lot of great details. And even just the story about the car. You talked about, it's interesting listening to you guys talk about just build great cars. And at the end of the day, you have to play to your strength. You know, what do you stand for as a brand? And I think, you know, we've been on this rebuilding for Cadillac for the last 10, 12 years, had to recapture the greatness of what we were. You know, there's no doubt that we're not where we need to be. So when we stand back and look at what do we need to do, we can look at great brands like BMW, Audi, and they have philosophies that guide their brand. You know, the ultimate driving machine, it's just that simple. Everybody knows that. Even a car enthusiast knows that that's the ultimate driving machine, you know? And everything they do kind of supports that philosophy. And so what are we? What is Cadillac? And we say, well, we're art and science, and there's all these things. Yeah, we are, but we're large luxury. That's what we were. And quite honestly, I believe it's what we are when we look at one of our core strengths today, the Escalade. Nobody does what that vehicle is. So here is this spectacular, big vehicle that takes you where you want to go in style. And it does just about everything you want to do. And what was great about those cars in the 60s? What was great about, you know, that nobody else could do what they did, and it was these large, beautiful, luxurious cars that had presence, that had a statement. It was great standing around the exhibit in Frankfurt because we did not have what I would call a magical exhibit like BMW. But
it was a little better than just cars on a carpet.
It was better than cars on a carpet, but we had a great car. And it was great listening to people walk around the car, French and Germans, and they said, BMW could not do this. And that's great. That's what you want people to know.
Well, I think it's important that Cadillac needs to be Cadillac going forward. Absolutely. And, you know, here across the street or across the town, your colleagues in the design business are doing the same thing with Lincoln. And for Lincoln, it's the same thing. Lincoln has to be Lincoln. Cadillac has to be Cadillac. And you got to stop apologizing because... And you said it, the presence on the road. When you see a Cadillac, the new Cadillac, the big Cadillacs, it's just like, oh, yeah.
But don't you think the art and science and the CTS and all that gave Cadillac the credibility to go do a car like the CL?
Well, it gave them, yes, credibility and permission to go back to what they did best.
It did. And when you think about what does art and science really mean, you know, you can get caught up in these words, mm-hmm. you know. And because the question was, well, what made Cadillac great? What made Cadillac great? In its day, Cadillac was not looking about what made it great back then. It was just eyes fixed on the future trying to create what was new, you know. And it wanted the newest, greatest technology. And we were all about creating the newest, greatest, most contemporary shapes and forms. We like to say, at least I like to say, an artist is never satisfied with his work. Once he finishes one thing, he's like, okay, that's... What's next? I need to find something better, a different type of genre, a different type of philosophy. So an artist is never happy. And technology is changing daily. There's things that are emerging all the time. So this philosophy of art and science for Cadillac should be a quest that really has no no end or no destination. It's just a constant quest of just moving forward. And you don't want to, I think you get in trouble when you try to be nostalgic because it's nice. It makes you feel kind of good. But, you know, as a designer, you're captivated by what's new, what's tomorrow. As a little kid, I used to ride my bike every year. I grew up in the high desert in California for a big period of time. And September was exciting. It was a very troubling time because the new cartoons came out, the new TV shows came out.
You're going back to school.
And the new cars were coming out. And it's like, but I'd ride my bike to the dealerships, and they used to park their cars in the back, you know, and you'd crawl around and try to see what the new cars were going to be. It was exciting. It was exhilarating. And my father would take me to the dealerships. He'd grab all the catalogs and lay all these things out, and they were always new every year. You weren't looking for something that looked like last year or 10 years ago. You were looking for what was new tomorrow. And I think as a car designer, that's kind of what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. You're not looking for the original iMac, are you?
No.
You're not looking for an Apple II. You know, I want that iPhone 5. You know, I want the iPad 3. What's the iPad 4 going to be? And what can it do? Somehow we need to capture that again in the automobile. And it'll do different things, but it needs to be magical, I think.
For the viewers, how long does it take the stuff that you're working on for them to see it in a car?
It takes too long. We're about 48 months out.
Okay.
So from beginning to end, you're around 48 months. So even the concept CL, it took us, we were off and on, not full tilt, but, you know, we spent about a year and a half on that car. You know,
and that's amazing to me because I believe car companies don't spend that kind of time on a concept car unless they're dead serious about doing something with it down the road.
Well, we love that car. I think it...
Do you want me to answer for Claire?
Yeah, sure. you did it for Ed Ballburn.
Of course they're, you know, I mean, GM's made no bones. They're going to have an entry into that segment and, you know. I mean, yeah, and GM of late, because of the financial situation, you do a concept, it's a lot more
it's not
thought,
the dream.
Yeah, a lot more thought and executional thinking going on beneath the sheet metal. And, yeah, I'm excited for Cadillac. I mean, I was with Ed, and Clay was there, and we were, you know, they were showing me stuff, and don't look at that. Oh, you can look at that, don't look at that. And I saw something that looked a lot like the CL with a roof on it, and it just flashed by real quickly, and it was gorgeous. I mean, awesome, in that fluid silver metallic.
Well, in fact, I want to get into more details on that, but we got to take another quick break right now because we want to thank our sponsors here who make this show possible. And Ben, let's thank our friends at Hyundai right now. Hyundai is known for the great value that it offers, but let's not forget about the technology. The Hyundai Sonata is the first vehicle in its segment with standard integrated Bluetooth hands-free phone. It's the first vehicle in its segment with factory-installed HD radio technology with multicasting. And it's the first vehicle in its segment with XM Nav traffic and XM data services. That, plus NHTSA's 5-star overall crash test rating and the IIHS top safety pick, explain why the Sonata is selling so well. And you can check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com.
I mean, we love having designers around because design is my favorite part of the business. And you guys...
It's the most important part of the business,
absolutely.
As we talked about
it's
here.
It's the ultimate initial product differentiator, and it grows more important by the day. And we've talked about we'd love to do a show from the lobby of the design center because these guys walk through those halls every day, and they can feel that historical legacy of GM. I'm sure you can feel it.
You can. That'd be a cool show, actually.
It would be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we
talked to Dave Barnes, haven't talked to Ed.
Yeah.
We were talking about
that. We've already dropped the hint on Ed Welburn.
I mean, we were talking
here we
about
go again.
When you walk into Ed's office, and that was Mitchell's office, and, you know,
there is a legacy of design at GM that's got to be a real rewarding to be involved with.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as a kid, you know, you grew up in California, car culture, you're embraced with it. And the cars that I had, I loved GM cars, you know, big block Chevelles. And I mean, there was something really kind of cool about it. And even back then, you know, my buddies that were Ford guys are still Ford guys. And we didn't have a lot of Chrysler guys, but we had GM guys and Chevy guys and Pontiac guys. But when I was in school and we worked on projects, I remember coming back to Detroit for the first time. And we visited Ford, and we went to Chrysler, and we came to GM. And it was amazing to me to feel exactly what you're saying. The moment, because GM was the last place we visited. And you went inside, and it was like, oh, my gosh, this is cool. You know, I've seen these pictures before. And it was different. And you feel a little intimidated. You feel a little responsibility. You know, this place was fine before you showed up. You know, so you're a steward. You're here for a period of time to hopefully be a custodian for these brands. You don't want them to fail. You want them to be great. And because they'll be around after you're gone, hopefully. And some pretty magnificent things happened at a time that was really wonderful. And you hope that you can be a part of some of these things that are magical. Mm-hmm. You hope that that when you're gone, people will say he contributed or he.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that the CL could be as significant to Cadillac in its history as the Y job was to Buick.
Well, yeah, that's kind of nice to say. I don't know if it's that significant, but it's important that people know that we know what luxury is more than anything. And I think on the CL, when you look at the CL, people will go, well, Cadillac knows what luxury is. And that was important for the car to symbolize, that we haven't lost that.
Well, what I love is especially the front-end graphic of the car, because as we talked about earlier when you showed it to the media a couple of weeks ago, is the grill looks like it could come right off today's DTS, and yet it doesn't look like it comes off today's DTS. The whole front-end graphic of that car is unlike anything I've seen. You know, I sort of catch glimpses of things past there, and yet it's totally new and fresh, totally different. And I'm wondering how you came up with that front-end graphic.
That's a good question. It's still not where it needs to be.
Here I am gushing about stuff, and they're like, oh, Jesus, we got to change this and change that.
We know every fault in that car, but there's not a lot of them. Nicky Smart, you know, he was the designer of that car, and it's pretty great. You know, Nicky, he works in our California studio, and Nicky did the Ariel Atom. So the Ariel Atom is a pretty awesome car.
Oh, that's an awesome car.
And he did that car as his master's thesis at the RCA, Royal College of Art.
Right?
And so he's a hard-nosed designer. He's a Brit, and it's amazing. You know, none of these cars you can really say, well, that's his car. It's such a collaboration of so many people. We had the interior is really heavily involved. You know, Gail Bouzin, he's French. You know, he is French.
And the interior is just gorgeous.
But it's the car itself wanted to have this beautiful postmodern simplicity of those madmen Cadillacs. You know, and when you look at how that grille sets up and that ribbon of alloy just pulls out of it and goes down the entire length of the car, almost like a nautical feel. It's almost a Chris Craft boat-like. Mm-hmm. And we've never been able to show the car in the way. At our studio in California, we have this awesome second story that you look down on the car.
So you see the plan view.
You see all the plan view. And it really is almost like a Chris Craft boat, which is nice because you have all the wood inside the car, which is really wonderful. But the grille really sets up the gesture of the entire car. And so it's funny, a car that has the simple forms the way that car does is a difficult car to execute. You know, we probably had 7 or 8 different body sizes on the car, changing plan views and moving things everywhere. But the simpler cars are the ones that are the most beautiful because you don't get busy. And you just see the form and the architecture of the car kind of shine through if you have a good architecture. But the grille really It really was a sketch that Nikki had, because we talk a lot the face of the of Cadillac. It needs to be this face that 200 yards down the road, that could only be Cadillac. But we wanted to move from where we are today. We're almost predictable. We have to get out of that.
Mm-hmm. But this car is not predictable.
It's not predictable, but yet it's still, and this is the quandary. You don't need to reinvent all the time, but it wants to look new. And if somebody looks at it and says, It's a Cadillac, but I don't know what makes it a Cadillac, but it can only be a Cadillac, but it doesn't look retro, then that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think we've accomplished something, because there are elements all through that car. Well, that reminds me of this, but it's not that.
And
that
reminds me of the future essence of Cadillac.
Future essence of Cadillac.
Well, I mean, you know, getting ahead of ourselves a little, but the CTS is the next CTS is doing exactly what you're talking
about. It does.
About.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And I think each car needs to progress it. You know, and it's funny, not every car within the portfolio needs to work that hard to do that much. There need to be some iconic cars that really, they do some heavy lifting for the brand and really pull it forward. And the cars underneath it, they just kind of need to kind of catch up, right, incrementally. Because certain cars, some public will say, ooh, that's too much. You know, quite honestly, as a car designer today, I almost think that we're kind of held back by artificially, but what the customers are willing to accept.
Yeah, but you know, some of the best cars out there, a lot of customers are gun shy to for the first couple of years. And I think the most successful cars are daring and challenge public tastes. And maybe about year two, the end of year two, the public starts to warm up to them. And then, you know, the thing is just screaming strong right up until the next refresh.
It takes a confident leadership team to allow a car like that to come to market because you have to have some pretty gutty confidence.
Yeah, you do.
I don't think Toyota's going to have that problem with the new Camry, do you?
No. No, the new Camry looks dated, even though it hasn't even hit the showrooms yet.
Well, you could rationalize yourself into a lot of things, you know.
So just what stood out to you design-wise, pure design-wise, at Frankfurt?
You know, I was listening to you earlier. There probably was no huge standouts. And I think the brands on display to me are the most powerful things. And Audi's building was really wonderful. You know, BMW has had that space for years and years with their own buildings. They were never that cool.
No, they were just sort of like tents.
Yeah, and it was like an Apple store. You know, it had that emotion. It had that passion inside of it. You know, and having a test track moving around was pretty cool. And I thought that was impressive. But as impressive as that was, I was really impressed by the BMW exhibit because the entire brand was on display. And you walked in, and as you experienced what was going on there from the I cars, which are really neat. I mean, those are really good, strong statements, you know, for the industry. The M cars, which are great over in the corner. Yeah, the original M5 sitting up there over against the new M5. The test track moving around. You felt the brand while you were in there, because at the end of the day, we talk about luxury being a very emotional thing. You know, you buy into the emotion. But really, cars are that way, period. That was an emotional place. And I thought the product kind of supported what the brand was about. And were there any standouts in there? Yeah, there were a few. I think there's some innovative thinking in the iCars. They're really neat. Volkswagen was great. The Up car, I agree. I think that's it's funny. We were commenting in there, and the Nils was neat, and the Up car was great, and they had the Beetle on the other side. And we were commenting as designers. It's like, boy, Volkswagen doesn't know that the Up car is the new Beetle, you know, because because that really is the basic people's car. It captures all what the promise of the original Beetle was. Very nice, very well packaged, and it's a simple car.
How about that Citroen look?
The DS5, they actually had them running around.
Yep.
That's the cool thing about the Frankfurt show. You know, it's 11, 12 buildings. And so to hike from one end to the other, it's a hike.
It's a hike.
So they had all different kinds of cars running around that members of the press could just flag down and jump into. And they had DS5s running around. To my eye, it's a little over-designed on the outside. But I got to tell you, everybody was raving about the interior of that car.
They're very expressive cars. You know, the DS4 is a nice car, too, you know, which is a neat car, a neat gesture on it. The Peugeot concept car was intriguing. You know, this kind of very, very monospacious, very wagon-ish. You know, we love wagons, too. You know, And that's the one thing, it just it kills you to see how great the wagons are over there. And we do have a great wagon. You know, CTSV wagon is sensational. And they're so functional, mm-hmm. and they're so passionate. You wish you saw more of those here. There were no, like, amazing standout cars. For a concept show, I would say it wasn't huge statements. The Mercedes exhibit, powerful. You know, it's like, wow. You know, it's pretty amazing. Those companies do a pretty wonderful job of putting their whole story on display.
Well, of course, they have a whole building to work with. I keep saying, they didn't have to work with the floor space allocated to them by the show organizers.
Right.
They have their own building.
Oh, yeah. And so it was good. But when you see the power of that industry at a huge show, you see technology, it's pretty, it's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we got to get to rapid fire in a minute, but we've also got to thank one of our sponsors for the show. And Ben, let's thank our friends at Bridgestone, then we'll do rapid fire.
I got this one, old man.
For drivers who want to get the most out of their cars, it's Bridgestone or nothing.
Okay, Clay, this is the part of the show where we open it up to questions from the audience. But we always have a graphic animation that we throw up on the screen to launch it off. And Ben, let's bring it up. Okay, first question comes from Jonathan. He says, why is it okay for Mercedes to share the structure with the Jeep but not the Maserati? I guess some people are, complaining that a Maserati is going to be built on a Jeep.
Why would you complain about that? It's a good platform.
Yeah. Let's see. Bad Nikki says, oh, I just lost him. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. Glenn E. wants to know, do you think that Camry buyers would accept a drastically styled car? No, not drastically styled.
But at least in the game.
Right.
I mean, because in 3 years from now, it's going to look, 10 years old?
It really is. And, everyone's seen the success of the Hyundai Sonata. We know that the Evos is the precursor for the next Ford Fusion. We've already seen the next generation Malibu. Mm-hmm. These are all cars with strong styling to them. And if you're not going to be strong with all your competitors strong, you're in trouble. Westride wants to know, what does IP stand for in automotive language? Go ahead, Clay.
Instrument panel.
Yeah.
We don't call it dashboards.
Wright Knight says, call it Fleetwood. Bring names back for future Cadillacs. I agree with them.
I would love to see that.
What makes you think we haven't thought about that?
Well, I know you thought about that. But, I tell you, all these numbers and letters, I can't keep stuff straight.
I like the regular names. The only problem is that you run into... But it's not like the original Fleetwood, in especially in Detroit, where there seems to be this overthinking of it, where let's resurrect the name, but let's go with the modern interpretation. Camaro did that very well.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are certain names that are magical. It's interesting. Land Rover just made the announcement they're dropping all their alphanumerics. And I think there are certain names like Fleetwood. I mean, could you imagine calling an Escalade an EL4? Going forward, you wouldn't do that.
No.
So I think there are certain names that are magical, but you better doggone well have the car to support the name. So that's going to be pretty doggone important.
El Dorado.
Yeah. In fact, we just got another one in here from Ray Schaefer, who's saying the same thing. He was raised a Cadillac man, and he says, drop those alphanumeric pointless names. Big, beautiful cars need proper names. Right, Peter?
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, Ben, I see we've got phone calls coming in. Let's bring in the first one.
Hi, John. Hi, Peter. Hi, Clay Dean. My name is Joe, and I'm calling from South Texas. I had a question for Clay Dean about the Cheyenne concept from a couple years back, Chevy Cheyenne concept. I wanted to know a little bit more about that, how that is going to really influence the pickup line. I know Clay worked on that. I see that some of it in the Tahoe. I don't really see it in this current generation of pickup trucks. I'd just like to know a little bit more if that influence is going to be spread somewhere. We can see that in the next generation.
The Cheyenne.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate that. I'm really interested in hearing the designers talk. Thanks. Bye.
Cool.
The Cheyenne pickup concept?
Yep.
I love that thing.
I do, too. That, you know, it's a great question. Appreciate the question. You know, sometimes we explore stories of where we can take the truck to. You know, the Cheyenne was actually our second exploration of full-size truck. We had done the Teradyne with GMC a couple years before. We kind of learned from the Teradyne and continued to expand it. And you're right, you do see the face of the Cheyenne in the Global Chevy face. That's exactly where the Global Chevy face came from that truck. You know, components of Cheyenne will find its way through. I think there are certain vehicles that the public was ready for, and that was perhaps not one of them. But I think what I think was great about the vehicle was the exploration of features and functions and proportion, great form. You could find almost every significant great Chevy truck in that vehicle in terms of a homage, from 55 Cameos to 67 Fleetwoods to our Fleet Sides to you name it. There were several cues that we had interpreted in an all-new, fresh, modern way, but then had the rugged nature. But you'll see some components show up. Some you'll just have to keep looking at the concept vehicle.
Okay, VRM Chris is asking a question. I'm not sure I understand it. Where is pen and paper for this guy?
Pen and paper, meaning?
I'm not sure what he means.
Lenders probably, do you still?
Oh, absolutely. The original sketches for the CL were pen and paper.
On a bar napkin, right?
They were on some crappy pieces of paper, I would say that. you know, creativity comes in different places. We do not restrict it. The reality is computers are a tool, and we use them where they're appropriate. We use traditional craftsman stories as well. And so that car was created by sketches and taken to the next level. So we use pen and paper everywhere, every day, all the time. And
it's very efficient.
It seems to work. You know, it's very fast. So.
In fact, you could go back to styluses and papyrus, and it'd probably still work.
Yeah, the computer does everything pen and paper does. If you can't do it in pen and paper, dude, you're not going to do it in a computer. So something to be wary about.
Cool. Let's bring in another phone call here, Ben.
Great show, guys. It's Jonathan in Old Japan.
All right, Jonathan.
Just a couple of quick comments. Love, love, love the GM lineup, the design work, the CTS-V Coupe, the Corvette, the CN, CL, Cadillac was stunning, the electric, the Cadillac Coupe was beautiful. Can't wait for the new C7. From my understanding, we're going to be really impressed, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. So hopefully, obviously you can't give us any information tonight, but hopefully it won't be more than 15 months, and we should see a production version before then. Thank you very much. Always a great show. Keep up the great work, and GM design is stunning. Fabulous. Big fan. Have a nice evening.
Well, thanks for the comment. Yeah.
I don't think we paid him, did we, Dave?
Yeah. Goggles Pisano has a comment. He says, I thought the Beetle marketed for guys was called a 911.
Yeah.
Badnicki wants to know, what do you all think about GM giving China proprietary electric vehicle technology? Why not have China build cars here? That's a sticky wicket, that one.
Well, you know, I guess I can comment just a touch, because I think what's going to be happening with the GM relationship is that they're going to create new proprietary technology there. I don't think it's necessarily us giving things away, but I think we'll share. It's a partnership that we have over there, so we work back and forth. But I think they will be creating new things that will be there, and we'll share what's appropriate and keep what is private, private.
Okay, there you go. Let's bring in another phone call, Ben.
Good evening, men. This is Youngblood in Cleveland, Ohio. My question is for Scotty Burgess. What'd you think of the Cruise diesel you had? And while you were in Frankfurt, is there any diesel news coming out of Europe? That's it. Bye.
Well, I drove the Cruise diesel because it's the one diesel that's going to come to the U.S. I thought it was phenomenal. That it's a 2-liter four-cylinder, and it is a great little engine. You could do 100 miles an hour pretty easily in that. You get really bad gas mileage if you do that, though. I was able to drive about 800 kilometers on a single tank, and I still had about an eighth of a tank to go.
So that's almost 500 miles,
yeah,
480, 490.
It was not hard at all, and the only thing I did was kept my speed under maybe 130 kilometers, so 70-ish, 80-ish. The one thing that I think that we'll notice is when it comes to the U.S., I bet you there'll be more soundproofing around the engine compartment. It's a little noisy. Europeans don't mind it. I mean, you hear them all over the place. And in the U.S., the diesels seem to be a lot quieter. And that's one of the ways, one of the tricks that they do is they put a little bit more stuff inside the engine compartment. But I wish more people would bring them. I think that they would be more accepted if there were more available.
I agree. I didn't hear of any specific diesel news coming out of the Frankfurt show.
No. I mean, there's lots of people. We're going to see more and more of the three-cylinder gas engines. That doesn't inspire me. But it's a fuel economy thing, and everybody's looking at 2015, 2016 CAFE standards.
Well, that's that 1-liter Ford.
Yeah. Ford does have that three-cylinder 1-liter.
But other people have three cylinders now too, as well. They've all been under development. Ford's first, I think, to come out with it. But
well, Fiat was first with a two-cylinder,
yeah,
sub-1-liter engine.
I thought Harley was the first
one. Well, okay, Mitch W. says, what is the rationale behind putting J-Lo ads on during Sunday football? He says, I am irritated in my posterior.
Well, go read my column this week. Besides everything else that went wrong with that marketing relationship with Fiat, that was the dumbest buy of all time, maybe. And they weren't content to just run it once. They ran it like at least a half a dozen times in football. It was just nonsensical, a waste of time.
He's got a second question, too. He says, the Ford ad, what does GM think about that fun ad about bailouts?
Oh, with the real people press conference thing?
Well, real person, fake press conference.
Yeah, fake press conference. Oh, it seems to be getting a lot of mileage out of it. I don't know.
Well, my feeling is Ford, Jim Farley especially, have identified that a clear differentiator in the market for Ford is that it didn't take the bailout money. And I think he's saying, let's press that button a few times here. That's my read of it.
Got to do great product. You know, can't look in the past, look in the future.
Yeah.
Great product, great product, great product.
JF in Quebec wants to know, what do you think of the Impreza XV? Will it cannibalize Forester sales? I don't know enough about it to say.
I mean, I've seen it, but I don't know what to say about it.
I don't think it will. It'll cannibalize Impreza sales.
Hmm. Mind VW says, make the next Volt look like the cars in Blade Runner. He said, I'd hit that. Scotty, or Ben, let's bring in another phone call here.
Hi, my name is Todd Leppard from Charlotte, North Carolina, and this question is for Clay Dean. Will Cadillac in the future maintain what it's been doing so far as creating great rear-wheel drive performance vehicles, and will this go forward with this new CAFE standards that are being implemented in fuel economy situations? So will they continue to make good performance cars, rear-wheel drive, to compete against other, you know, foreign European manufacturers? Thank you very much.
Hey, Todd. How you doing? That's a voice from the past. There's room for a little bit of everything in our future. I think the Camaro has shown how successful we can be in that segment. CTS-V has shown how successful. We'll balance our portfolio with the right products that you need, but you need to have passionate product that people love, and the future has passionate product in it. So at different price points and different power outputs and different configurations. So rear drive is not going anywhere for a while.
Are we the last generation of rear drive vehicles?
Not even. No? I don't think we have a...
30 years from now, they'll still be...
Sure.
I believe. Yep. I really do. I remember, in the late 70s when GM said, no more rear drive. It's all going away. Everything's going to be front drive. And Never say never.
That was the launch of the X cars.
That's right. That's exactly right. So knowing that you're a brand champion for Cadillac, Prehistoric says, we want Caddy ATS info.
I'd get fired.
I've seen it. I've seen it. It looks great.
Hey, it's going to be a neat car. It's a different chapter for Cadillac. I think it opens up a door for different customers. And I think it gives us opportunity from a global perspective to do some things that are different. So there'll be lots of discussion and time about that car, but it'll be neat.
George from Brooklyn wants to know, is anyone going to buy the Volkswagen up? I think a lot of people will.
You know, it's a $13,000 vehicle. You know, and I think in Europe it'll be very successful.
Yeah. I don't think they'll bring it here necessarily.
I think a component of it will show up here, from what I understand.
So, interesting.
They're fans of that brand, and they'll probably do well with it. But it's a well-done vehicle.
Glennie wants to know, will we have any Chrysler executives left, or will Sergio put all Fiat executives in charge? I'd say first round, they're all going to be Fiat. But let's see what happens after that. Clearly Sergio knows the Fiat guys better than the Chrysler guys, even though they've had Chrysler for 2 years now or something like that. But
he's also applying his negotiating tactics with UAW that he did in Europe, which is very interesting since they've moved Ford up and pushed Chrysler back, because that's going to be contentious.
I think it is. I think Sergio's here to play hardball. I don't think that the union has awakened to that yet, and I was flabbergasted that they extended the deadline for the contract till, what, mid-October.
And moved Ford up.
Yeah. The Chrysler one is the one to watch. Yeah. The Ford one will go together fairly quick is what I think, unless the radicals in the union really want to force the issue.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of Chrysler people moving up through the ranks. There's some really good executives over there.
Sure.
I agree. But they're all pretty young, too. I think they're all like in their 40s or something like that. That's why I say in this first round, it'll mainly go to Fiat execs. But I think, give it another decade or so. And I think you're right, Scott. I think we'll see a lot of Chrysler guys come up through the ranks. Hey, we've got more phone calls. Ben, let's bring one in.
Hey, John. Dan from Durham here. What do you think about the fact that the Hyundai Genesis, the new Hyundai Genesis, and the Ford Evos are both stealing styling cues from Aston Martin? I think the Evos might be the new next new Mustang, the 2014, the Ford One Mustang. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, that's interesting. Number one is there is some Aston Martin in the front end of the Evos concept car.
GT 500 Shelby, too.
Yeah.
And that as well. But I think when you see the production version, they've toned it down some.
And if you get around to the side and the three-quarter rear of that Evos, it's like it's a different car.
Uh-huh.
And you could sort of see, there's Mustang going on in there.
We've talked about it, because we always pay attention to where guys are going, And it definitely has Mustang tone, Aston tone.
Yeah.
All through the car, the gesture, even the body, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves and how they can use that as a statement on all their product.
Well, we do know, and you've written about this a lot, Peter, that, for the 50th anniversary of the Mustang, they want to wow everyone. They're not going to just come out with another redo of the car that they've got.
No, it's not going to be retro. They've said that.
And I like this trapezoidal grille that they've moved up. I didn't like the lower below-the-bumper trapezoidal thing. It started to look like a weird beard on cars. But I like how they've moved it up, and I could see where that would work on a Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Let's see. George from Brooklyn wants to know, when will Daimler kill the Maybach experiment? Well, there's already rumors out that they're going to drop Maybach.
I think they ought to kill Smart first.
Well, yeah. But they're not going to do that because they've got a new platform coming with Renault.
Right.
So they're not going to give up on Smart just
yet. Why do they have to kill Maybach,
Selling.
Yeah, but if they only made 20 a year, just charge, $2 million a piece for them or something.
That might work. That might be a great idea. You all wants to know, why is the cruise-based Orlando, the SUV, not sold in the U.S.?
Choices. I think everything can be revisited. Everything can be changed. But I think the decision right now is that there wasn't really that big of an opportunity for it here.
To which one?
Orlando.
Orlando. It's like almost like a little minivan kind of a thing. But I think it's still three row, isn't it?
I believe so.
It's in Canada.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
One of the things that I had heard regarding it is that there's certain costs to Americanize it. And as those costs start to add up, if it becomes too expensive, you lose the whole business plan for it. And they were still able to sell it in Canada, and there wasn't the changes that you would have to make to it to sell it in America just become too cost prohibitive.
I wonder, too, if it starts to impact on Equinox, maybe even Trailblazer a little bit. And or not Trailblazer.
It's
what
a
am
neat
I thinking?
Vehicle. It's not one that I go, oh, wow, I really wish they had that here.
Yeah. I saw them running around in Europe, mm-hmm. but I wasn't aware that they were in Canada, too. That's interesting. Hey, Ben, we've got some more phoners. Let's bring one in.
Hi, John. Big fan. I'm just wondering what you think the future of the Lambda platform is for GM. I guess you have a special guest on tonight, so that would be a good question for him to ask as well. Thanks. Bye. I'm from Tilbury, Ontario as well.
Cool. We love our Canadian fans.
Lambda, so that's the Acadia, the Traverse, and the Enclave. Successful vehicle. People love it. I have one in our home. My wife drives it. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. It's been a very, very successful vehicle. And here, China, everywhere we sell it, it's received very, very well.
So. When can we expect to see some new faces, new redesigns on those? Because they've been around 5-6 years now. The Buick's 6, I think.
Is that long?
5 at least.
Soon.
Yeah, I would say the bankruptcy probably had something to do with the fact that it's been around that long. And then there's rumors, too, that there's going to be a Cadillac version coming.
Rumors.
We've got a comment from CNG Almost. And he says, or she says, since the U.S. is against diesel cars, GM should come out with CNG options in some states to pioneer the idea. Well, there are CNG vehicles.
Honda's got it.
Well, Honda's got a car. I think GM's got a couple of CNG options right now, and I know Ford does. I think you can get a CNG Transit Connect, I want to say. I think there's, I don't know, they've got a couple of other vehicles, too. But the problem is they're
infrastructure.
Well, it's infrastructure, and they're expensive. You know, people mm-hmm. forget that. We have crash standards. Now, think about having a CNG tank that's under, I don't know what, 2,500 PSI pressure? Is it higher than that? I can't remember offhand. But it's under high pressure. Mm-hmm. And then you got to put this thing through the crash tests, and the fuel lines in the tank can't crack or leak at all. I mean, so they're built like an Abrams tank, the whole fuel delivery system. And I want to say that a CNG Honda Civic is $7,000 more than a gasoline equivalent. And then if you want to put that, what they call fill, the CNG...
Station in your house,
because your house doesn't have the pressure to fill the tank. You have to have a pump to do that. That's another couple of grand on top of it installed.
And they have a less range. They're like 250-mile range.
Right. So, I mean, unless you're getting almost free CNG, it's a very costly conversion, and as a result, they just don't sell that well.
Although they still have it on the next generation car. It's interesting. You go in San Francisco and you see CNG stations throughout the city. It's intriguing. And Australia has a very strong infrastructure of CNG. I know Holden does a lot of work, I think.
And in Europe, you see what they call autogas, which is liquid propane.
Yep.
And it's a whole lot cheaper than gasoline or diesel, and it burns really clean. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and in fact, I know you can get autogas, Tahoes, and Escalades in Europe.
Well, I think, you know, your point, it's a great comment because, you know, everybody's always looking for the answer, the silver bullet to what things are going to happen. And the reality of the future isn't that simple. And you'll have lots of solutions. There'll be diesel, there'll be electric, there'll be hybrid, there'll be gasoline, there'll be, I'm sure, fuel cells will emerge. We heard that from a couple of companies in Frankfurt. There are so many different ways to approach what's going on. And I think we should just accept that there's going to be several solutions based on what's happening. And that's okay. That's good. That shouldn't be a problem.
Looks like we have one more phone call coming in. Ben, why don't we bring that in?
Yeah, John Rick from San Diego. Yeah, I think that Insignia, or what it would be, a Regal wagon, would sell here. I mean, Subaru sold over 93,000 Outbacks last year, and year-to-date it's at 67,000, which is nearly 10,000 over last year's sales. So they're probably going to eclipse 100,000 sales this year, which is a lot of sales for what's supposed to be a vehicle that won't sell. The Insignia comes with V6 all-wheel drive. Don't see a problem with it. Buick would make one. And on the Cadillacs, the future of Cadillacs look like going to be great. Thanks.
Yeah. Scotty agrees. Okay, one last question here. Steve wants to know, why did not LuxGen, which is a Taiwanese car company that's just started up in the last year, he says, why didn't LuxGen buy one of the defunct American brands if it wants to be in the American market? And I would say two reasons. Number one, pride. They've got their own brand, LuxGen. If you're going to start your own car company, and do you really want to buy a brand that is defunct? I mean, you know, it went out of business because it wasn't able to survive. I'm not sure I would want to go that route. It's a good question, though, because not a whole lot of people know about LuxGen.
I think it's a lot more complex than that, too, when you look at the brands that GM shed. You can't really buy the brand and then the production
Look, Penske tried to buy Saturn. He was that close to having it. In fact, he did have it until all of a sudden he realized nobody would build cars for him. Or I should say Nissan pulled the rug out from under him on that.
At the last minute. Literally.
Literally, right. Well, look, we ought to wrap it up here. But Clay Dean, it's been great having you on the show, man.
Appreciate you inviting me.
It's a lot of fun. Scotty, great having you back, too, man. Like I said, I'm so glad you were at that dinner for Ford because it was a lot of fun to be at that dinner. And Peter, as always, good to have the auto extremist on board.
Yep.
Well, thanks for tuning in on this week, folks. And don't forget that you can always follow us at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit or at twitter.com/AutoLine. Catch Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com or twitter.com/AutoExtremist. And you can always get Scotty's stuff at
AutoCritic on Twitter.
Oh, at AutoCritic on Twitter. Okay.
I couldn't believe that was available.
No.
And at debtnews.com.
Debtnews.com. DET.NEWS.
That was back when they got that URL. They thought it would be better to just have the shorter version because people don't like long URLs.
It's true. They don't. That's why we're getting a shorter one that we'll be announcing soon.
Detroit, though, would be good to have in your URL when it comes to SEO. So.
Right. And if you want to see any of Clay's stuff, just go to the GM site and start poking around. There's a bunch of things there. And if you can't, just go to the auto shows. His things will be there, too. Remember, we'll have everything on the iTunes store for the podcast. And thanks, everybody, for having tuned in.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.